The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
Let's get started. Welcome back. So, how are you feeling right now? Good? We had a good? What else? I'm sleepy. Anyone else? What's that?
Mellow.
What else? Too much lunch. What else? Sleepy. Another word for sleepy.
Caffeine plus.
Caffeine plus. Okay. All right. Yeah. There's something about practicing, putting the tilling the soil for practice of samadhi for the state of samadhi, practicing samatha, that can kind of like, it can be a little, we can err on the side of more calm and more sleepiness and more tranquility instead of being more energized. So be aware of that, and it's okay, it's not a problem, just being aware of it. So this afternoon, as I give guided meditation, especially with lunch, especially if too much lunch, you might feel very sleepy. So I would recommend doing standing meditation. I might do that myself just to model it. But there's nothing wrong with standing up and meditating. It's just as wonderful a posture as sitting. So it gets a bad rap. So it seems like sitting is the where it's at, where enlightenment happened. But standing or lying down is just as good, or walking. So I say that ahead of time. So if you feel sleepy, just please get up and you can open your eyes and practice. The other thing I also wanted to say is, as I've mentioned before, the seven factors of awakening, three of them are energizing factors, three of them are calming factors. And samadhi is a calming factor, is a calming factor of mind, together with tranquility, pasadi, as well as what we're going to cover next month, which is the seventh factor, is equanimity. Equanimity is also a calming factor, and there are three energizing factors. And the energizing factors, what do you guess they are?
Curiosity.
So, yeah, exactly. Wait. Okay, one at a time. Curiosity. Okay, so Dhamma Vichaya is one of them. It brings more energy when you're curious about something. Okay, good. Okay, second one. Well, give me time to kind of like to expand on it. Joy. That's the same. Curiosity is an investigation. Dhamma Vichaya. And then joy, pity. That's also more. Kind of wakes you up for the sense of joy. Okay, good. And we've got one left.
Engaging.
The effort, wise effort, engaging. Virya, that's another one of the energizing factors. Okay, so three are energizing, three are calming. What's left? Sati, mindfulness. And how does mindfulness serve?
Well,
yeah.
During lunch, I was looking at one of the books. I didn't hear that.
Do you want to grab a mic? Would you? Thanks.
During lunch, I was in the library because we missed a little this morning and I needed a little catch up, and looked up in one of the books the seven factors of enlightenment or awakening, and mindfulness was described as the conductor.
Yay.
I thought that was an interesting in this group of seven.
Yeah, exactly, yeah. It's considered a conductor, it's considered the balancing factor.
Mm-hmm.
And there is a sutta where, the Buddha is talking about, the balancing factor, the calming factors and the energizing factors, and then with mindfulness, it says, mindfulness, you can never have enough mindfulness. Like, mindfulness is what tells you whether you're getting too calm, so you up the energizing factors. You're getting too agitated, therefore you can up the calming ones, and you become more calm. So mindfulness, being mindful, tells you what is needed. Awareness tells you what the balance, the right balance is. So basically, what I'm inviting you is, if your awareness this afternoon tells you you're getting too calm, that's the time to up the energizing factors. Stand up, open eyes, bring in more energy, more virya, or more curiosity. You see how that recipe, that invitation really fits with the instructions? You use your awareness to balance these factors. Okay? So, with that, I'd like to say a little more about about samadhi, and then move to actually doing a guided meditation or sharing instructions with you with anapanasati, mindfulness of the breath, which is the main object. But there are, as I mentioned, there are 40 objects of to practice for practice of samatha in the Visuddhimagga, in the path of purification. So you're wondering, really 40? Like, what are those? Some of those 40? There are a lot of them. So just to give you some examples, there are the Brahma Viharas. There is metta. There is loving. So the four Brahma Viharas: metta, loving kindness. The second one, compassion, karuna. The third one, mudita, vicarious joy. And the fourth one, upekkha, equanimity. All of those are also objects that you can practice samatha with. They're samatha objects. So you can become absorbed. You can become really, the mind can become very still and stable with any of those practices. Why? Because it's the same thing. You're staying with the same. You're not doing serial monogamy. You're not like changing your, with the same object. May you be safe. May you be happy. May you be well, in the case of metta or loving kindness. And you're staying with the same person. You're staying. You're not switching every 5 minutes. You're staying. You're staying. You're staying. You're staying. And that staying with the same object makes the mind really, really stable and calm. Mind gets to into a groove when you're not switching around, when you're on the same object. Mind gets into a very, very happy, content, stable, spacious, bright, blissful groove that it just doesn't want to leave. It's like, I'm perfectly happy. This is great. Ah. At first, it's kind of like a little bit of a struggle. It's like going surfing, you know, they're the waves, right? But after you get over the waves, like, oh yeah, it's smooth sailing. It just, you get carried by the momentum of the mind on the same object. That becomes really, really easeful. Maybe some of you have had this experience of maybe either biking or going hiking or exercising or something you've been doing, that something that maybe at first felt effortful, and then after a while maybe the thought came up, oh, I can just keep doing this for hours and hours. It feels like I don't want to stop. May not be true, right? You know, you're going to run out of energy and glucogen, but that's kind of the state of the mind. Like, oh yeah, it's like it's smooth sailing. You just do this forever.
The object you mean is the breath?
Yes, object, yeah. So when I talk about various objects, object is what your mind is resting on. It could be the breath, it could be metta, could be goodwill, right? So that's what I mean by object. It could be any of these 40. And I was just giving you some of the examples of the 40. Breath is just one of them. You know, the four Brahma Viharas. Those are some other examples. Another example is what's called practice of kasinas, which we don't really practice so much here. I've practiced them with my teacher, and the Buddha would give the different objects to different people depending on their proclivities. So the kasinas are colored discs, basically colors. So you can just have your mind stay with the color white. That's one of the kasinas, or the color yellow, or the color orange. And you can just stay. You know, you can, when you're preparing your mind, you can be taking a, you know, orange color flower and just kind of looking at it, having a mental image, closing your eyes, just staying with that color. And then the mind will get really stable and absorbed and has a sense of stability with that object, that then when the mind is really stable and absorbed, then it can be turned to any other object. Then it can be opened up to vipassana, and then you get to see things a lot more clearly and with a lot more crispness and detail and sharpness. It's almost like you're sharpening your pencil with just staying with one object, and it gets really, really sharp, and then you open it up to the other objects. Does that make sense? Moving from samatha practice to vipassana. So lots of different objects to practice with. The elements, water, fire, earth, and air, those are some of the other kasinas that you can practice with and your mind can get up. So just, another one is practice of working with the body. There's different, there's us, well, you know what, I'll just stop there. So let's just go to the breath. But breath tends to be the one that's most accessible for people, and it's easier for people to work with. For many reasons, it's accessible, it's easy. For some people, it could be difficult, so there are other objects that are available. But for most people, breath is kind of there, comes and goes on its own. You know, if you haven't had too much complication with breathing in the past, or don't have an iron lung, and you know, those would be the special cases where you probably want to do another object. But for most people, breath is actually a really, really good object. So, okay. So let's see. All right. So I'd like to delve into some of the teachings for breath, and trying to decide. I think given the limited time we have, this afternoon I'm going to do whole body breathing, and or having the breath be in the abdomen. If this was a 2-day, I would refine the instructions further in the second day and give more instructions. The anapana spot, which tends to be here, but that, if you don't start with that, because that can get you tight and complicated. So let's just start with, let's get into this in a more easeful way. I'll read the instruction for you. The instruction from the suttas is that breathing in long, they understand, I breathe in long. Breathing out long, they understand, I breathe out long. Breathing in short, they understand, I breathe in short. Breathing out short, they understand, I breathe out short. So this seems really wordy, right? But that's really the emphasis of it. Like, you're really understand each and every breath. Is it short? Is it long? Every in-breath. Is this in-breath short? Is this in-breath long? Is this out-breath short? Is this out-breath long? So we're going to start there. See if I want to give you the other steps yet. Actually, let's start there. And then there are progressively other steps that get added to that. But another thing that... So let's not forget all of the tilling the soil we've done this morning. Like, don't start like really tightening around the breath now. So as I will guide you through the meditation, I'll first touch on all the principles we've been touching on this morning, just to have a sense of ease, and then we'll turn our attention to the breath ever so gently, okay? And if you're feeling a little sleepy or tired now, please stand up now. Don't wait till later. Okay. So getting into your meditation posture. Whatever that may be for you. Feeling a sense of integrity in your body. Arriving in this body, arriving first and foremost, relaxing the body, checking to see if the body is relaxed. Relaxation, number one. Does it help for you to remember the feeling of sitting in a warm bath or under the shade, cool shade of a lovely tree in a warm day? Calm, refreshing, relaxing to the body. Relaxing. Receiving. Being in a mode of receptivity. Receiving the whole breath as it moves in and out of your body, the whole body breathing. The whole body breathing. Receiving, receiving, receiving the joy of this present moment. Enjoying, enjoying just sitting. Just sitting and breathing. Enjoying the simplicity of this in-breath. Enjoying the simplicity of this out-breath. Very simple, nothing complicated. Relaxed, receiving. Enjoying this moment. And if you find your mind wanders, remember gentle persistence. Gently saying, not now, with persistence. Ever so gently bringing the mind back, staying. Staying with the sensations of the breath. It's a different practice compared to Vipassana. We stay with the object. We favor the object. We favor the breath. Gentle persistence. Again, if you're feeling agitated, the emphasis on gentleness. If the mind is too loose, the emphasis on persistence. Bringing in a little more energy. And notice if there is an intention of renunciation, seclusion in the mind, and intentionally invoking, favoring seclusion of the mind in favor of calm and stability. Shielding the mind from the various thoughts, distractions at this point in time, just for the sake of this practice right now, for stabilizing and strengthening the mind, favoring seclusion. Seclusion within yourself. Am I secluding my mind right now? Or am I inviting lots of thoughts going on these different trains of thoughts right now? Can I renounce? Next, checking in with surrender, letting go of the outcome, and trusting the process. Let letting go of wanting a particular outcome, and just letting go into, trusting this process. That is forward leading. Leading to the mind settling, calming, and to liberation. And noticing if there is any curiosity or interest in what you're doing. If the mind is interested in the breath, receiving it with interest, no need to go out or reach out. You can receive with interest, with curiosity. What does that feel like? And noticing your attitude, your intention. What is the quality of your mind? Is it at peace, ease, welcoming, or is it tight, wanting something to happen? Staying with the in-breath, with this out-breath. With each in-breath and each out-breath, is it short or is it long? Receiving each in-breath and the out-breath in your whole body. The abdomen is fine if that works better for you. Either the whole body or the abdomen. This in-breath. Short or long? If you do find that your mind is easily distracted, one support you can use is counting. Counting the breaths up to 8 or 10. And then starting from 1 again, counting up. And you would count at the end of the out-breath. So it would be in, out, and then counting 1. Ever so softly. Ever so softly. 95% of your awareness, your attention, still rests with the breath itself. With the sensations, with the short or long, just a tiny 5% is with the counting. This is important. like to invite us to seamlessly move into practicing samatha, no walking meditation, and then silently coming back in for another instruction. My hope is that the next couple of sessions build up on each other in terms of the momentum of the mind being stable. So let's come back in 25 minutes at 3:15 in silence, and I'll do another guided meditation with the further instructions. So with the walking that you're going to do, let the walking be being with the breath, the in-breath and the out-breath, exactly what you did, but walking. Your anchor is not your feet. Notice the difference. The anchor is not your feet. It's not your body. It's your breath in your body or in your abdomen. Okay? See you at 3:15. So we're going to continue our long sit, walk, sit by seamlessly going into another sit to build the momentum of the mind for stillness, for stabilizing, resting, collecting. As you're sitting and receiving your breath in a relaxed way, being aware if the in-breath is short or long, and if the out-breath is short or long, the next instruction further refines this practice. As the level of collectedness of the mind increases, the sharpness, the clarity increases, the next instruction will further engage the mind for even more clarity, more engagement, upping the ante just a little bit in a subtle way. Previous instruction I shared is similar to as if when you see someone from far away, you kind of get a sense, oh, are they short? Are they tall? Kind of from a distance. And as you really get to know the person more, you can examine, you can get to know them more intimately, similarly, with some sense of distance. At first we notice if the breath is just short or long. The next instruction gets us a little more intimate. Experiencing the whole breath body, I shall breathe in. Thus they train, experiencing the whole breath body. I shall breathe out. Thus they train. Same way that if someone from afar came closer and you were touching, perhaps an intimate friend, you were feeling their shoulders, their head, their belly, their legs, feeling, the whole body, the whole body. With this instruction, feeling the whole body of the breath, experiencing the whole body, the whole breath body, I shall breathe in. And experiencing the whole breath body, I shall breathe out. Can you be with, can you receive the whole breath body, the whole in-breath? Touch it, feel it, experience it. The whole in-breath as you breathe in. And the whole out-breath as you breathe out, staying with it. So there are more instructions and more teachings, and I think this is enough. It's more important to have a sense of it, an experiential feeling of what it's like to actually have an uninterrupted period of practice. I was having fun. I don't know about you guys. I was in the groove. Sweet. So I rang the bell now because I wanted to leave some time for questions and comments, and throughout the day today I left less space for questions and comments and reflections so that there would be more quiet and more practice time. But now that it's towards the end of our practice time together, you are welcome to ask any questions that might have arisen for you during your practice or during anything that I said. And if there aren't too many questions, then there's more things that I'll share with you about Samadhi and other states. You know, but I mentioned states of absorption and jhana. I could say a little about those, but I will pause. So questions, comments. Are you all so mellow and in a state of samadhi that you just don't want to talk? That can happen too. Okay, with that comment, I just killed all the questions. No way. Trudy, please grab it. Or somebody will grab it for you.
That's nice. Thank you. Yeah, I've enjoyed the lessons very much. A few years ago, took a series of day-longs on Anapanasati, and it was the most impactful teachings of my life, I think. And I still retain them, and your introducing part of it today was like coming home. Was very, very nice. One comment beyond that is that I am now a little bit older than I was 10 years ago. And so the idea of walking meditation with attention on the breath did not work for me. If I have walking meditation, I need attention on the breath, on the walking, mm-hmm. and I will keep on breathing. Mm-hmm. So I just thought I'd mention that in case.
I appreciate you bringing that in. And of course, with every practice, we need to adapt it to work for ourselves.
Yeah.
And in this case, very wisely, you are adapting it to work for you.
Yes.
And the instructions are, if one wants to practice Anapanasati, Samadhi, practice Samatha with the breath, mm-hmm. The object continues to be breathing while you walk. So those are the instructions, and I'm delighted that you made them so that they work for you. Thank you. Yeah, over there.
I found that a bit draining. And I think when I practice Vipassana, that I often feel very energized.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel I felt a bit of the analogy that you gave of kind of breaking through the waves to get out to the calm.
And
I did, and I feel very calm, and my mind feels very quiet.
Nice.
But I feel a bit drained, tired from it.
Yeah.
Not like I do from, so.
Of course. That's not surprising at all, because you've been now practicing Vipassana for a bit, for a few years, right? And you're just starting, right? Samadhi, Samatha practice this afternoon. So of course you're changing your tune, right? And it's like, okay, what do I do now? Of course that's more effortful for the mind. What else did you expect? Right? So I so appreciate that you're noticing that, oh yeah, of course. It's learning a new skill. Like, you know, if you were just picking up, if you're a piano virtuoso, like, okay, got this, got the scales, and got it. And then you pick up a violin, like, oh my God, this is so tiring. Right? It's a little different. It's a little different. So, and also I do appreciate how you talked about the feeling of breaking through the waves, and you got to this place of calm and stability and the groove. So it may not take days or months to kind of build the muscles, you know, the mental muscles, whatever they are, for this capacity. But yes, of course, with any new thing, it takes more mental energy and mental effort. Yeah, thank you.
I've been practicing for a fairly long time, and over 10 years, pretty regularly. And I really enjoy these retreats and Wednesday mornings and, you know, my own hour on the cushion. But when it breaks through into real life, it's very rare for me. Mm. You know, the juggernaut of, like, body blows to, like, just, oh no, you know, just like my washing machine overflowed and it didn't seem like any of this was available to me. Mm. And it seems like, you know, when I see the teachers and I see the promise in their tranquility and the ease with which you teach, handle questions, and conduct yourself, but that is elusive to me, even with great sincerity. Mm. So, you know, I just want to say that. Mm-hmm. If anybody said, so why do you keep coming back? I guess it's because an hour of this is better than not an hour of this. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But to translate into everyday life, really difficult.
Mm. Yeah. Thank you for saying that. And I'd like to ask you a couple of questions, if that's okay.
As long as it's okay with everybody else, because I don't...
Yeah, of course. This is, like, it's not... It's a teaching moment.
Okay, because right. I don't want to take
This
time.
Is a teaching moment. This is great. So first, I really appreciate when you say that actually it gives you trust when you witness, you know, people who have traveled on this path, but just a few steps ahead of you, the teachers, like, oh, yeah, something has shifted. Mm-hmm. Something has shifted for them. Mm-hmm. And I can tell you that something does shift. It happens. So I'm delighted to hear that you have trust. It's borrowed trust, mm-hmm. right? It's borrowed trust. So there are different shades of trust. And this is borrowed trust. When you're borrowing, like, yeah, I'm going to keep coming because, first of all, it's better than none. And also, they're onto something, and, you know, like, this is going to happen sooner or later. So it's mm-hmm. borrowed trust.
Yes, it okay? is.
So borrowed trust, and now verified trust. So I want to ask you a couple of questions about verified trust, because I have a sense that if you actually think about your life, if you think about the version of you before you started to practice, long, long ago, and think of something in your life, maybe not the washing machine, maybe that's 100-pound weight, I don't know. Think about something a little lighter that would just drive you bonkers. Whereas nowadays it's like, it's not as heavy.
My son has a big student loan, and I don't care about that anymore.
There you go. Okay. Perfect. Terrific. So I'm going to ask you to think about, to really jot down, maybe when you go home today, really make a list. Because this is just one, you're in the hot seat, you just came up with something just like that. Didn't take you long. But if you actually sat and meditated and really came up with a list of things that don't bother you as much as they did before, I have trust that you will have verified trust in your own practice, that it has changed you. You have changed completely. It has translated to your daily life. Maybe those 100-pound weights, there's some things about those things that still trigger you, and it feels like, oh, I failed. But see all the ways in which you have changed. Your daily life has been affected.
I can do that.
All right.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
I'll take that home.
That's awesome. Thank you.
It's less a question than a comment that the title of Jack Kornfield's book is perhaps a little too close right now, but it is After the Ecstasy, the Laundry. And it does deal with, coming home from retreat and things right. like that. I read it a very long time ago with the book group here.
And I go back to the verified trust, just for people who have been practicing for a long time, just to see how it's actually changed. I think of the title of his book slightly in a different light, actually. Mm-hmm. And the light in which I look at that is that it's not all about bliss, which could be the topic of what we're talking about today, because the states of deep absorption and samadhi are kind of like, woohoo, ecstasy, woohoo. So that's like, okay, after that, you're going to come down the mountain and you still have to be in daily life. So I see that slightly different offering. Yeah.
But it might be a useful book. As I said, I haven't read it for a very long time. My experience actually is the opposite. Mm-hmm. For me, it's less about what I get on the cushion and much more the practices. The teachings over the years.
Mm-hmm.
They just, we've talked about, they just, you calls them
insidious.
They're insidious. I think it's more pervasive, maybe the word. Because insidious does have a bit of a negative.
It does, which is funny, actually. Yeah. I like that. It's kind of tongue-in-cheek.
Yeah.
This practice is insidious.
Yes.
Infectious. Oh, my God. Raising. Yeah, infectious. That's good. Infectious in a good way.
But it just, it pervades. Yeah. And it begins pervasive. And, of course, at first, and maybe I'm just, it's because I tend to live in my head and categorize and label and so on. But what you were describing with your son's student loan was what we're going to talk about next month, equanimity. No matter my wishes for you, your happiness is going to depend on your actions, or in some cases, your inactions, or whatever. We have a child with whom we have to work on that a lot.
All right. Yep.
Looking forward to next month.
So come next month. We'll talk about equanimity more. Great.
So I have one where the word I think about, which is surreptitious, when I think about the practice.
Yeah.
It happens in the background. Yes, I can. It happens in the background, and
right.
it's not something you even want to happen, but does happen. You start to notice how the teaching matches reality.
Right.
You start to say, well, I should shift a little bit. But today, it's interesting because as I sat, I just got flush and had a hot flash, and just sitting here, just feeling just giddy, actually. So...
Nice.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. This side of the room now. Okay.
So maybe I have an off-the-wall thought, but it's kind of like, do you think that samadhi is kind of like looking at your own mind without the thoughts?
Not so much. So it's not so much looking at the mind, because that's another practice. That's basically awareness of awareness, consciousness of consciousness. That's where you turn the mind and look at itself. That's a different practice. Yet, all these practices. And I would think of samadhi more as, there's so many different ways to think about it, but I think of samadhi as stabilizing your awareness so that you can see very clearly. So if you had a pair of binoculars and you were looking through them and they were all unstable, so binoculars looking at, say, you're doing vipassana, you're kind of this object and that object and this other object. Okay. So what samadhi does is it's not moving. You can, it really stabilizes these binoculars. So you can see a reality like, oh, wow, I hadn't seen this level of detail. Oh, wow, I missed that all this time. And then you can, after having stabilized the awareness, then you can look at phenomena, different phenomena. Wow, look at that phenomena, look at that thought, look at that emotion, look at that whatever it is. Wow, you can see so much more because it's really stable now. So that's one way to think of it. So the way the mind gets really stable through just staying with one object, staying with the breath, staying, continuing to stay, awareness becomes really sharp. Then you can turn it on anything. You can turn it to your consciousness or the mind itself. Or you can turn it to other objects or reality. Or you can then turn it to the fourth foundation of mindfulness, which is, say, you can start to look at impermanence. Look at things arising and passing. And then you start to see all these details of arising and passing. You can turn it and examine not self. Like, whoa. Whereas these things can be elusive on their own. But when the mind is really stable, then you can really look at these things. Does that make sense? And in the meanwhile, while we're stabilizing, the kind of the spiritual goodies are that there's great states of bliss and joy. And you've heard of the jhanas before, and I've mentioned them too. Those are deep states of absorption where the jhanic factors, there are five jhanic factors that will come up. I'll just mention them briefly. Vitaka vichara, which is applied attention, sustained attention. So those two you kind of do. And then the third one, which kind of starts to come up on its own, is joy. Is like sense of joy, well-being kind of bubbles up. PT, and also known as rapture. It just starts to show up when the mind really stabilizes. The fifth one is sukha. Sukha is bliss, like the sense of bliss that pervades the whole body and mind, unlike anything else in life. And the fifth one is ekagata, which is the mind being so stable as if it's been nailed to an object. It's just not going to move. So these are the things that kind of arise on their own after you go through that surf period and the mind is grooving and these things come up. And many of these, and after these five factors, five jhanic factors really come up, and that there's a lot of teachings on that, but this is just kind of like a quick review. Or preview, rather, so they come up and they stabilize, then the mind by itself gets sucked into the jhanas, the first jhana, second, third, and fourth, and they're each different in terms of factors, in terms of the feelings, but they're thought of as ways that the mind continues to rest in these absorptions, continues to develop instability, and they're so pleasant that it's not so hard to kind of hang out there. It's just you don't even want to leave, but your mind continues to get trained in stability so that when you leave the jhana, then you have this very stable binoculars that you can look at reality. That's how the teaching is used. You do the jhanas, you stabilize the attention, then you apply it to vipassana. So that's the path of jhanas after vipassana after samadhi, after samatha. What we tend to do in the West because of the teachings of Mahasi Sayadaw is dry vipassana. We don't spend so many weeks and months and years cultivating samatha. We might do it for a few minutes at the beginning of every sit. We just spend with our breath and then we move on. Whereas, for example, my teacher, Pak Sayadaw, he teaches the Visuddhimagga. He teaches the way that's in the suttas and in Visuddhimagga. You spend months, sometimes years, cultivating the jhanas, cultivating samatha. When you're done, okay, then you're ready to do vipassana. Otherwise, you're not. So 5 minutes, you know, a few minutes versus like weeks and months. You're welcome. Any other questions or comments?
What was that phrase that you used? Not now, was that it?
Yeah.
I had a little. That was hard for me. Mm-hmm. I mean, I could say not now, but then I'd start wandering again. But.
Yeah.
It's going to take practice.
It's going to take, exactly, practice. Yeah, great.
I want to just also say I heard, I wasn't able to attend, but your day long on death.
Mm.
Oh, that was stunning for me to listen to on Audio Dharma.
Thank you. Thanks for saying that. It's a powerful teaching. I appreciate, Thank you. Yeah, please.
Several things I could say, but I've also been practicing for quite a while, but because it's vipassana and dry, I also haven't really done a deep dive into samatha or the samadhi.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really appreciated it, and I'm now interested to do a deeper dive into it. I think that would be very, very fruitful. And I did notice the mind, when it would get very calm, thoughts would come in. At first, thoughts came in and would like take me away, but mm-hmm. then I got past the waves.
Right.
And when the thoughts came in, they like wanted to hang out there because they could, you know, it was like there was a clarity on the thoughts that aren't normally there.
Nice.
And you know, and it was kind of like, not now, sometime we'll do that. But I could feel the shift of thoughts coming in and how they were being felt. Or, you know, that was a different
relationship
to those thoughts. Yeah.
Neat. Yeah. Very cool. Yay.
And then you just talked about it, and I go, yeah, that's what it was.
That's what it was. Exactly. Yeah. Neat. I'm delighted to hear that. So, and I'm also delighted you're more curious. So there's a two-day.
I know. I've got a flyer.
And by the way, also there's CE credits. So if anybody, you know, is a nurse or a psychologist and you need to get CE credits or know somebody who needs CE credits, that's another way to get it. But the retreat's great. I'm delighted. Sweet.
Thank you.
And Mitra had a question.
I felt calm, and that's not a usual thing for me.
Mm.
So maybe this is what I need to kind of concentrate on this sort of meditation.
Yeah.
I mean, it was so light. I was worried that if I thought about like counting the breath, I would lose my, you know, I would lose it.
The calm, yeah.
The calm, and if I thought about how long is the breath, but I felt like I was able to ride on the breath. I was able to keep it with me.
Nice.
Which I've never been able to do.
Nice, that's it. That feeling of being able to ride the breath, being able to keep it with you, keeping with the breath, that's it.
And that's every time I got worried that I'm going to lose it, I said no. Not now, or
yeah,
what you said. I said that, and I stop the thought. But I was worried, worried that it won't come back.
You were doing it.
Yeah.
This is great. I'm delighted.
Me too.
I'm also delighted to hear that the sense of calm you feel right now as you check in with your heart and mind and body. Mm. Like, oh yeah, I am calmer than I usually am. This is not usual for me. So remember this.
Yeah.
You were in the groove. Nice. Delighted.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions or comments? Yeah. Last one.
I'd like to thank you for talking about the Vipassana and Samadhi, because I always cannot tell the difference. And I'm glad to hear that.
Great.
And the second thing I want to talk about is about the lunch.
Yeah.
And this morning, because we had some meditation in the morning, right?
Mm-hmm.
So by lunchtime, my mental state was quite calm, actually.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to lunch.
Mm-hmm.
And I found out that, you know, I had, you know, a very relaxed feeling.
Mm.
And so I was able to enjoy my lunch.
Mm.
And I ate gently, like you said.
Nice.
And so then,
nice.
You know, and then I found out that I have a better digestion without the rushing, you know.
Yeah.
And chew slowly.
Yeah.
So then I feel really comfortable. A very good lunch for me.
Nice.
And so I figure out that because I, in the past, yeah. I didn't think eating is that important.
Yeah.
So I usually just rush in wherever I'm standing, whatever, I just finish it. I don't really find a place to sit down and, you know, enjoy it.
Right.
But from today on, I think I would like to, you know, try to relax first before I go for food, and also, you know, sit down comfortably and eat gently.
Nice.
And I want to practice this.
I'm delighted to hear.
It's so good.
Beautiful.
Thanks
for sharing this. I'm delighted to hear.
Thank you.
Well, you know, the insight that arose today for you at lunch.
Thank you.
Yeah. Thanks for you can leave it in the middle. Thanks for sharing that. I'm just so delighted to hear that. Yay. May there be many, many meals, gentle meals.
Yes.
It's lovely. It's just lovely. So thank you all. It's been a pleasure to share this day long with you in our series, and looking forward to seeing you next month. May you be well. May you be happy, may you be safe, and may all beings everywhere be safe, may all beings everywhere be happy, may all beings everywhere be free, which includes us. Thank you for practicing. Take care.